Let me ask you, should I keep the Twitter going or not? Keep it going?
So, you don't need me to tell you this, but politicians on Twitter can cause, from time to time, some problems.
You know, it's a way of bypassing dishonest media, right? We go, wow.
It's supposed to be a give and take, like a dialogue, a way for a representative to interact with their constituents. But a lot of the time, if a politician doesn't like what you're saying, they can just block you. And this is happening here, too. Our political reporter, Julia Ritchie, has been reporting on this. And Julia, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So can you learn a lot about a politician just from their Twitter feed?
That depends on the politician.
Yeah.
So there are definitely those who have their sort of legislative interns running their accounts. Yeah. And
they have no idea about it.
Yeah, they have no idea about it. I think Senator Orrin Hatch probably has a few people running his for him because it's very sarcastic. But then there are others, like the senator I interviewed, Senator Todd Weiler. He's a state senator, who are very good at it. And you can learn a lot about Senator Weiler based on his tweets.
Also, they don't have to go through us. They don't have to go through journalists,
right.
The media.
It's unfiltered, right?
It's unfiltered.
Yeah. So that's another thing is like you said, they put something out there. It's their own press release, basically, in 140 characters. This is happening. So it's really a communication tool, but it's also a news tool now. It's a news gathering tool, reporting tool.
So there are all kinds of rules and guidelines for how a political figure is supposed to campaign.
Not really.
But that's the question. There are for other things. Are there rules for social media?
No. And that's what I learned, right? Yeah. So that was the whole crux of this piece is that a lot of politicians start out with personal accounts, right? And they might not even be a politician yet, or they might not be an elected official. Once they are elected to office and they're using their Facebook, their Twitter, or their Instagram for official state business. So that could be like, here's a hearing I'm at, or here's I'm collecting information. That's when it crosses this line into what the ACLU describes as a public forum.
Yeah.
So now you've created a public forum. It falls under open meeting laws, maybe, or maybe not.
But does it? I guess that's the question. We don't know yet.
We don't know because there are some lawsuits now.
Yeah.
So that was sort of where I'd heard about this is there are a couple Twitter users out there who are banding together to sue President Trump. He has blocked them. And they say they've blocked him because they were critical of him, not because they were abusive. And so now this case is sort of making its way up the court system. And a lot of other people are taking their elected leaders to task for this as well. So the question is, what is the obligation of your congressperson or your elected official to keep the channels open for dialogue on their social media accounts?
Yeah. So right now, let's say you're a lawmaker and you have a Twitter account and someone says something critical, not racist, not offensive, not dirty, just critical. Can they just block you like the president did?
Yes. I mean, they do, right? Yeah. They can and they do. So, and that's sort of what's been happening. And that's where the problem is that we are now allowing elected officials to become the arbiters of what is and is not okay, right? They're saying, well, he crossed a line. But what's the line, right? That's the whole free speech argument. The First Amendment is all based on like, hate speech is okay, actually, you know, and you don't have to put up with abusive and offensive things. But what was that really that offensive?
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing. It's like, who's deciding these things? Is the person who's offended? You know, in that case, then that is like a Wild West territory.
So how did you come up with this idea of getting a Utah lawmaker together with a critic that he had blocked?
I don't know. So I really, when I first heard about the lawsuit against President Trump, I was like, I'd also heard about Congresswoman Mia Love had been getting a lot of complaints from people, and the ACLU had sent out this letter, the local ACLU, our state ACLU had. So I said, okay, I want to do a story on this. But then I was like, you know, I don't just want to go to the lawmaker and then go to the person he blocked. Like, I really want them to talk to each other because I think that gets to the whole point of it, which is that if the person was able to talk to their congressperson or their elected official to begin with, would they have said what they said on Twitter?
Like, would they have slammed the door?
Yeah. And so I was so nervous because I really didn't think anyone would do it, you know? And then one of the worst offenders is Democratic senators. So this is, I should mention, this is a bipartisan thing. Like Republicans and Democrats are doing it just as bad as the other. So I first went to Senator Jim DeBacchus because he has blocked a lot of people. And he said, yeah, sure. And then, of course, then if it kind of fell through. And then I went to State Senator Todd Weiler, who's a Republican, but he agreed.
All right. So set this up for us, though. This woman, not his constituent, we should say, Senator Weiler, but concerned about, as you lay out in the piece, air quality. So she has something critical to say to him, and she does. What's the tweet?
The tweet was something to the effect of, the disrespect you show your constituents is appalling. We are all choking and want to see serious action on this issue. So he blocked her like immediately after that. That was in February during the session of last year. So,
what was the idea?
My idea was, I want to see if Senator Weiler will defend why he blocked this woman. I found a woman who had agreed that said, yes, she'd like to talk to him on why he blocked her. I wanted to see what he said to her, because then I wanted to see if that was different than what he told me. Hey, this is Julia at KUER News. I'm actually sitting here with Senator Todd Weiler right now. So I was just going to put you on speakerphone really quick. He says he's unblocked you now. So, but I wanted to give you a chance to just, you know, say your piece if you had something to say about air quality or the social media blocking. Does that work for you? Okay. Okay.
Hi, Jessica.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jessica.
It sounds it's pretty awkward.
Oh, it's so awkward. I was so uncomfortable. I almost regretted it when I did it. I thought once the conversation started that they weren't really going to engage with each other. I really thought that. Because I thought there was a longer pause, but as you heard, I kind of jump in and I go, so what do you have to
You're
say?
You're trying to fill the silence.
I am trying to fill the silence, because I think they both don't know at that point what they want to articulate to each other. Weiler on why he blocked her, and her on how she felt about that experience. Because as the piece goes on to explain, you know, she's a pretty just normal woman living in Kaysville, cares about air quality. She tweeted at him something kind of like firm, but not over the line. So I don't know. I was just, I was like, oh God, is this going to go okay? I think he had sort of this, I don't know, like epiphany while he was talking to her about maybe I shouldn't have blocked her. I don't know. I think that comes through. It's like he starts to feel bad about it, you know? And so, and he explains to her why he did it.
My guess was you caught me when the air quality outside was bad, because it's bad every February typically.
Sure.
And I was during the session, so I probably had been, you were probably the eighth or ninth or tenth person that accused me, blamed me for the bad air that day, and I just probably had enough. I'm like, I'm not going to put up with this. So.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say that I really respect people who are willing to run for office, put themselves out there. I understand that you received probably a lot of positive feedback, but also a lot of negative feedback. When people are angry, that's usually when they're motivated to reach out to the representatives rather than when
true.
They're happy with how things are going.
So it kind of works out.
And,
I mean, they...
Yeah, I will say I think this is where sunshine acts as disinfectant.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have unblocked her had I not put him on the spot and said, I'm going to make you talk with the woman you blocked. He immediately unblocked her. And he said he regularly goes in and he unblocks people. I think he said he was blocking like 20 people at that point, but that he goes in and unblocks people, which is, again, what kind of rule is that? Right? Why did you block them in the first place? And how many other politicians out there are blocking people because they just feel like it? It's just so... random. And it hurts. I think that's the other part of the piece I really wanted to explore, is how it made Jessica feel. Because so many of the people, I sent an open call out on Twitter and I said, tell me if you're being blocked. And I heard back from like 20 people. It was the most I'd ever heard from someone on Twitter when I do an open call for like a question like that. And so many people just were like, I don't care. I don't care. But they do care. They do care about being blocked. It feels personal. Feels like, hey, I thought I was bringing up a legitimate point, and instead, you know, I'm getting a door slammed in my face.
I'm not a mean person in real life, and I'm not typically a mean person on Twitter, so
Well, hopefully that's the same for me, right?
Yeah. No, I appreciate the dialogue, and I'm glad you texted me. I'm glad I responded. So please continue to do that.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks a lot. Great conversation.
Bye.
All right.
I mean, how do you feel just having talked to her?
No, like, I feel a lot better about it. So,
I mean, does that show you, like, online it's just not real
it's
life?
Not real, it's not real life.
You said to Senator Wyler, does that show you that online is not real life? What did you mean?
I kind of regret saying that, if I had to be completely honest. I think I was trying to help him feel better about the exchange and how he had blocked her to begin with. And I think I actually voiced what so many people say in these circumstances, where they separate what they're doing online and they separate it from what they are doing in their actual lives.
Because it is real life. In the new universe, well, this is real.
I got comments on my piece after it aired from people on Twitter who said, you know, I loved your piece, but I do consider my activities on Twitter as real life. I do consider my engagements with my elected officials as real and as meaningful. And so I think that is where the issue is, right? Yeah. Is that we so often brush off what we do online as not important or anonymous, as being able to be concealed in some way. And so we feel bolder and to say things that we might not say if we were actually face to face with that person or that official.
This is new territory, so people are trying to figure it out. I guess that's the question. Do you think they will?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is too soon to say how, especially with President Trump's tweets and how they sort of drive the news cycle for the day, if more lawmakers will use that as a tool to drive the conversation and things like that, or to shut out people that might be more critical of them. I think that's where this lawsuit kind of comes into play, is what is the obligation of the elected official to continue to engage in this way online? And will that scare elected officials away from online?
Yeah. For KUER's Julia Ritchie. Julia, thanks.
Thanks. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Why aren't you on Twitter?
Because I'm terrible at Twitter. I'm terrible at all social media.
Oh, you're good at engaging with people, though.
I know, but I haven't figured out the digital way of doing it.
Digital way of doing it. So you're still, do you not think it's real life?
No, I don't think I do.
Oh.
Right, though, it is, isn't it?
More to Say is a production of KUER News. You can find Julia's story in our show notes or at KUER.org. This episode was produced by Tim Slover and Lee Hale, with music from Poddington Bear. Our host is Doug Fabrizio. If you want more Doug, you can hear him every weekday on his other show, Radio West. Listen on KUER or find it in your podcast app. And while you're there, rate this show. Tell us what you think. We'd really appreciate it.